Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winter is Coming Game of Thrones podcast. We are Take the Black, and I'm your host, Razor, and I'm here with Annie Bundle, Corey Smith. We're missing our panelist, our fellow goddess, Isis. She's out enjoying Adele tonight in Dallas, and that's okay. Let her have her fun. But tonight, we're going to get into a fun topic, and that is the topic of theories. Theories we think that might actually happen now because of all the filming leaks and photos and videos that have been taken compared to that ridiculous Reddit leak that we talked about last week. We're gonna talk about our favorite theories, but before we get into it, Annie, we've got some news about the city of Seville. So why don't you kick it off for us?
Okay, well, first thing first, the city of Seville is where Game of Thrones filmed Dorne in Season 5. But don't worry, they're not filming Dorne here in Season 7. In fact, from all of the rumors we have, it's standing in for King's Landing. This is the area where we've heard about the Dragon Pit. This is the area where we've seen catacomb-like areas that look like where dragons could have been stored once upon a time. And basically, it's the next stop on the Spanish tour of filming for Game of Thrones. So they're done in Zumia. They're done filming on the beach. We're done getting all of those great shots from across the water. And now we're in this area of Seville, which is very closed off. Like in Season 5, where things were gated off and we literally couldn't see anything that was being filmed, this is another area where everything is gated off. It's a ruins, so they've actually, like, put a plywood ceiling over it, so you can't actually see down into it. They have done so much work to basically keep the public from being able to see what's happening. And why? Well, that's because everyone is showing up. And I don't just mean, like, we saw all those people together in on the beaches. We saw, like, Liam Cunningham. We saw Kit Harington. We saw Danny. We saw Missandei. We saw Grey Worm. We saw Varys. We saw, you know, we saw Alfie Allen. We saw so many, you know, characters all together in one area, right? And we were really excited about that. Uh-huh. Well, every single last one of them all got on the same flight and went to Seville en masse. And when they arrived, they were met by Nicholas Calder-Waldo. Let's refer to him as NC-Dubs from now on. NC-Dubs, because I hate mispronouncing his name. let's see, who else is there? The guy who plays Urien. Let's see, Brienne is there, Gwen Christie. Basically, it would be easier for me to report on the people who are not there, which would basically be Sansa, Arya, and Bran. That's it. Like, everyone else is freaking there. And, like, you know, we haven't actually gotten a picture of Lena Headey, but several sources have reported that they've seen her and that she's avoiding the cameras. Even, like, actors like Mark Gatiss, who played, like, Tycho Notaris for, like, you know, the Iron Bank the Iron Bank dude, right?
Yeah,
basically the guy from Sherlock, who mm-hmm. basically, like, suddenly showed up and was, like, the head of the Iron Bank for a minute, right? Even he is apparently going to be filming scenes, right? Like, everyone is freaking here, okay?
Everybody's there.
Even the Mountain. Even Qyburn.
And even Rory McCann.
Yeah, so Click and Bull people can start getting real excited right about now.
Click and Bull get hype! Air horn blows off.
The Hound and the Mountain are in the same city to film at the same time. Now, we should put it out there that, as we know, the executive producers do like to fuck with us, shall we say? They had the whole Shay thing they did last year. I would put money, if there was anything that we saw, like, people have asked, is that a fake scene that they did to, like, throw us off? No, you know what? If there's anything I've seen where I would think that they were doing it just to fuck with us, it's putting Rory McCann here, because there's no reason for him to be in King's Landing. Everything we know about the group with the Red Priest and
Brotherhood Without Banners.
Brotherhood Without Banners, thank you. That whole group, like, we think they're going to the wall, right? We assume they're going to run into Miss Melisandre and that they're going to go north, right? It makes no sense for Rory McCann to be in Seville to film in King's Landing unless he decides to leave them and deliberately go south.
Let me drop some Lee Corso on you for all you college football fans. Not so fast!
What the heck is that?
You look it up. Not okay. So fast. Okay. So here's the thing. That stupid Reddit leak we read last week said that Jon Snow leads a ranging party out north of the wall with the Brotherhood Without Banners, including the Hound.
Bullshit.
Sorry. Yeah, go fuck yourself. To find a white or a white walker. And when they do, they get trapped on an island, and Dany comes and saves them. In the process, she loses Viserion, who is then risen from the dead as the Night's King Mount, but Jon Snow is left. Benjen comes and saves him, and Jon Snow leaves on Benjen's horse. But Jon Snow then comes back to King's Landing with that white or a white walker. We don't know the exact details. Okay, so what if the Hound comes with him?
That's a possibility. I mean, you know, we can fan fiction this all day. Trust me, over at Culturist, we will be.
And they've had some, by the way, I want to plug Culturist here. You guys had some fantastic Ghost and Drogon fan fiction. So if you guys are looking for some furry / scaly fan fiction, head over to Culturist. It's quite good.
Rachel is really great at those. It's hilarious. That's basically the big news, is that all of these actors are there. The other big news we have is that we have what we think is the lineup of the four directors who are directing this season, which doesn't really, like, seem like a big thing. But the thing is when you see the directors on set, like, we saw a fight between Alfie Allen and a bunch of Ironborn over the weekend, and we saw Jeremy Podestwa on site. And we now have sources are telling us that Podestwa is directing the first and the last episodes of the season. So that probably means that scene where Alfie is getting beaten up by other Ironborn is either episode 1 or episode 7. We don't know which.
That's pretty cool. And we saw some, you know, we've seen those pictures. We saw, I guess, a video of Alfie Allen fighting. But what we didn't, we saw, like, blurry pictures, and it was kind of like, it looked like he kind of was getting his ass kicked a little bit. We didn't see all of them, but Corey Smith, you shared some pictures in our chat today. I don't think we even shared them on the site because it wasn't worth it, but there were some more clear pictures and more detailed pictures, and it looked like Alfie Allen as Theon was actually giving as good as he was getting. Like, he was actually laying somebody out, and there were boots on the ground, like somebody had been laid out, and he was swinging back, so I don't think that Theon's getting his ass kicked. I think he's actually standing up for himself, which makes me pretty happy.
Well, assuming that the photos that we were looking at were kind of in sequential order, it looked like Theon was kind of initially getting his ass kicked and got kind of bloody in the process. But then towards the end, whoever was kind of kicking his ass, we couldn't tell who it was. It looked sort of like Euron, but nope. He had a full beard as opposed to just those redneck sideburns.
It wasn't Euron. It wasn't Euron because he had a bald spot. Yeah. He had a bald spot.
No, I know it wasn't. I was just saying it looked sort of like him initially. But and then at the end of those photos, whoever's attacking him is on the ground, and Theon's kind of standing over him triumphantly. So, I'm kind of impressed because we hadn't really seen fight from Theon. We've seen the flight, you know, we've seen him, you know, take Sansa and flee from Winterfell and then go back home. We haven't seen, you know, kind of the aggressive, you know, fight side of Theon since, I don't know, back in season
Since he cut off Sir Roderick's head. Right. Well, I mean, he pushed Miranda to the ground, but that was really just kind of a snap reaction. But, I mean, he cut off Sir Roderick Castle's head, and that was the last time we actually saw any, like, real
fighting.
You know, piss and vinegar out of him. But moving on, so Annie's broken down the actors. We've seen all the major players, basically, except for Macy, Sophie, and Isaac in Seville. And this also kind of goes to the fact that Jon Snow leaves Sansa in control of Winterfell. And she also, and Macy as Arya shows up to Winterfell. And Bran goes back to Winterfell. And we have a Stark family reunion, just like that stupid leak said, that Jon's not there when Bran and Arya return to Winterfell, which, you know, kind of makes sense. If they're not in Seville while Jon's there, they're all back home at Winterfell. So there you go. There you have it. You can put two and two together if you want. I still have a lot of problems with the league. I still don't believe all of it, but I was reading on that wonderful subreddit, the Free Folk, and I was reading some of the comments, and some of those guys were saying, look, yeah, a lot of it doesn't make sense, but if this guy got it secondhand from somebody who claimed to be, there on the set and claimed to have seen the scripts and was giving it to him, it could have got a lot of the details blurred and a lot of the different finer points could have been missed. So when you're talking about like a white or a white walker being brought to King's Landing, that could have been just completely, that could have been one of those finer details that were missed. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of those things could have been looked over as far as the details of the leak. Anyway, moving on. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about our favorite fan theories that we think now that we're into the final two seasons could actually happen, things that could come to fruition through the show, and not necessarily the books, because, hey, look, we don't know what's going to happen in the books. George R. R. Martin may never, ever have the Winds of Winter, and curse me for ever saying that, but it's just the cold, hard truth. We don't know if he's ever going to have the other books finished. So right now we have to go off show knowledge. We're all Shonleys right now. So the fan theories are out there. We've all seen them. We've all read our fair share of them. So I would like to start. And one of my favorite theories is that Jon Snow is the Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire is about Jon Snow. It's not about Jon Snow and Daenerys. It's about Jon Snow. He is the Song of Ice and Fire. And here, let me explain. He's born of both Stark lineage, which is the ice, and he's born of both of Targaryen lineage, which is fire and blood. Winter is coming, fire is fire and blood. So he is the Song of Ice and Fire. Let me give you a little bit of proof really quick. When Daenerys in season 2, I believe, was leading her Dothraki group through the Red Waste, and they made it to Karth, she ended up going to the House of the Undying towards the end of that season, and she saw the visions. In the show, she didn't see this in the show. It's only happened in the books, but this is a prophecy that this is a little bit of a vision she saw in the books. And it said, she saw her brother Rhaegar looking at an infant, and he looks back at his wife. And it says, his name is Aegon, and this is his song, the Song of Ice and Fire. And most people interpret that as he's talking about Jon, not his actual son, Aegon, that is his son, Jon. And that's why many people think that when Lyanna whispered into Ned Stark's ear in the Tower of Joy flashback, that they're going to name Jon Aegon Targaryen. So, you know, you can leave it at that if you want to, give or take, whatever. So I also think that Jon Snow is the prince that was promised. He's going to be the prophecy fulfilled. He's already died and come back. He has a Valyrian steel sword that's killed a White Walker. And I just think that he is going to be the catalyst for everything that's going to happen in the show. If somebody's going to slay the Night King, it's going to be Jon Snow. And by that time, I don't think he'll be a Snow anymore. He'll either be a full-on Stark or a full-on Targaryen. And at the very end of this series, he will be the Song of Ice and Fire. I would love to hear any of your rebuttals to that. Corey, I know I know you're itching.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. I don't know necessarily some of the evidence. I think because I think in the vision you're referring to, I think Elia is the woman that he sees in the vision.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So, and he did have a son named Aegon that was killed by the mountain in the Sack of King's Landing, to kind of before the series started. So, I mean, I think you're pretty spot on. I mean, I think the book series being called A Song of Ice and Fire is a big, you know, hint towards it, obviously. And then, like what you said, it's him being the first combination of Stark and Targaryen that we're aware of. Because I think, you know, rarely the Targaryens would go outside of the family to marry. I think they have some history of marrying with the Lannisters, with the Baratheons. But we never saw them, and of course with the Martells down in Dorne, but we never saw them combined with the Starks. And of the two families in Westeros, the Starks and the Targaryens are the only ones that have special powers, if you want to call it. The Starks have the ability to warg into animals, mm-hmm. and then the Targaryens have the foresight. They can see into the future. They can see visions. That's how they escaped the Doom of Valyria to begin with.
Right, right.
So I think that the book setup is showing those two houses are the most important. Everybody else is kind of a background player. And so I think it all points to you being right, that Jon is 100% the Song of Ice and Fire, and that he's the main character, and that Dany is, you know, supporting actress.
And I don't want to knock Dany's accomplishments down. I mean, no. she's coming over to Westeros, and she is the most powerful, probably in my opinion, the most powerful female in the series.
Agreed.
And yeah. She is going to, as our beloved Isis likes to say, she's going to wreck some dicks next season. But here's my thing. If George R. R. Martin were to end the series with a Targaryen once again taking over the Seven Kingdoms and ruling from the Iron Throne, all you're doing is reliving the past, right?
Right.
So yes. That's the most boring, tropish end to a series that claims to be a non-tropish series. Like, why would you go and do that if you claim to be the one that breaks the mold, you know, or breaks the wheel, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I just don't – like. I think that Jon Snow – being legitimized somehow through proof of whether there's proof in the Winterfell crypts, whether there's proof in the Citadel, whether him being akin to Dany and Drogon likes him and he's able to ride a dragon. Something proves that he's a Targaryen, whether that's proof or not, it's going to come out. And I'm not saying he's going to be king. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's going to be king of all the Seven Kingdoms.
Well,
I'm saying I'm saying he's going to defeat the Night King, and he's going to be the reason that they live.
Right. And if he does survive the battle, which I'm not 100% sold on that he does, we have to remember Jon's claim to the throne would come before Dany's. He's the son of the firstborn, so his claim would take precedence over Dany's, even though she's technically the elder. So
yeah, but they could throw all that out the window at that
and
point.
And they could, right. They totally could. But his claim would come before Dany's, assuming he survives the battle with the Night's King. Because I'm with you. I think that he's going to serve a special purpose for whatever reason. He's going to be the only one that can defeat the Night's King because he's unique. Dany's a 100% Targaryen. Her mother was a Targaryen. Her father was a Targaryen. Jon's the first combination of Targaryen and Stark blood that we've seen. And I think that that's going to lead to some sort of unique ability that allows Jon to defeat the Night King. And I think you're totally right on that.
All right. Who else wants to go next? Annie, Corey, Bone, Corey Smith? Who's up to bat?
I'll tell you guys why you're both wrong.
Okay.
So the person that's going to end up sitting on a throne is going to be no one, because there will not be a united Seven Kingdoms when this ends. Because as we have as both Danny has said about breaking the wheel, and she's like, she's going to figure out when she gets over there that the whole point of the Seven Kingdoms was to unite everyone, and if she can, you know, she's going to go into battle with Jon Snow, and it's like, I don't need to force the North to bend the knee to me. I don't need to force anyone to bend the knee. I just need to get everybody to agree that we should all work together to stop the White Walkers, and then, you know, we can all help each other out. There's no point in me ruling over you. We can be business partners or something. Mm-hmm. And so the person that's going to end up on the Iron Throne is going to be Ghost, and he's just going to sleep there. Sorry, I was
that answer.
I was trying to think of an equally cheesy ending, but the problem is, Razor, and you said, oh, you know, I can't think of anything more tropey than, you know, Danny ending up on there. It's like, well, how is John any less tropey? The messianic savior, you know, coming back from the dead to save everybody. I guess equally.
Well, I don't want John to sit the throne. I'm not talking about John sitting the throne. In fact, I don't think John wants the Iron Throne.
That doesn't matter. Like, if John lives, then people are going to want John on the throne. And there are going to be people that want Danny on the throne as well, but, like, yeah, if he's alive.
I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily tropish for John because, I mean, you remember, it's not like he was born some prince. He's not Robb Stark. He's not Joffrey. He was born, as far as everybody was concerned, a bastard, and he was treated that way his whole life. So I don't know that it necessarily be tropish for someone to rise from being, you know, a bastard sent off to the Night's Watch and everything that he did there to
King Arthur.
Okay.
How is that anyway, Corey Smith? Tell us what it's like. Shit. Tell us what it's like being a bastard trying to rise up in this
world. You know what? I mean, every once in a while, between singing and not paying attention, you just fucking.
I want you to realize. I want you to realize that the concept of being sent away and then coming back and taking over the kingdom. You described the Lion King.
You know, I'm not saying that necessarily I do see John on there, but I don't know that it necessarily be the worst.
Here's my point.
Is necessarily for him to end up on the throne.
And I think
if there isn't even a throne. I'm not sold that there's going to be a throne at the end of the thing. I kind of think that Martin's shown that, you know, and on the show too, that the pursuit of the throne is what's screwing everything up. So,
I can just see some, like, bearded, like, not as, like, basically like Karl Marx looking guy, like, talking about the proletariat this season, like, in the background, and then by the end of it, we've got, like, a full-on, like pro-rebellion happening in King's Landing. Now,
if that happens, you are so fired.
I know, I'm sorry. No, the reason I brought that up, that it's equally tropey to have Jon sit on the throne, is that, and I think we've talked about it on here before, This Game of Thrones show that you guys watch, I don't really watch it. It's gonna end up with a fairly tropish ending, regardless, because there's only like what is the thing, Andy? You did theater where there's six stories.
Seven stories in the world.
Seven stories. So, I mean, it's all been told before. Uh-huh. What makes stories interesting is the in-between, the ending. If you hinge on the ending, you can make a great product, but it's not going to be something worth coming back and revisiting. That's why people shit all over, you know, Shyamalan now. It's like those movies have great endings, but then the whole buildup was the ending. This is about the journey to get to where we're going.
Right.
So if it ends up with Danny or Jon or Tyrion or someone like that on the throne, that it's like, yeah, but it's just another rich person on the throne. It's like, yeah, well, that's kind of how it works. Like,
so let's
hang on. We're in a country right now that is about to that has a chance to elect. And I'm not saying this as a statement. It's second Clinton after, you know, you had Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, and now Clinton maybe. So like families that get in power, Kennedys and Roosevelts and Bushes, like they remain powerful
right
long past the first generation. So it's like it's even worse. It's worse, quote unquote, in a place in an oligarchy like Annie said. I mean, hell, in this one, we're still voting supposedly on people. So, but Alex Jones down there. I'm joking. But, we
I was going to say, you know, in this, and for people who think that this is somehow new, you know, we had John Adams and then we had John Quincy Adams. Exactly. So this is a thing that's happened in our country for 200 years.
Teddy and Franklin. I mean, it's,
right. You know, yeah.
You would have definitely had John and Bobby as well. So
yeah, if he hadn't been shot, you're absolutely right. Exactly.
So, I mean, yeah, it happens. So the idea that it's quote-unquote tropey, and I think that that actually is the best conspiracy theory by the Razor, and that's why I think yours is the best, is saying this is going to end with a lot of people we like dying, but when it's all said and done, it'll be a more or less somewhat happy ending with someone we like on the throne and the White Walker's gone. And then you're going to have people go, I don't know, man, Game of Thrones kills a lot of people off. But it's like, yeah, well, Game of Thrones had a cast of 60 at one point. You really can't do that anymore. So
I'm done. Basically, can we just all agree to throw out the trope argument now at this point? Because really, yes. Let's just – like, it's basically – it is trope. You're right. I mean, if you want to tell an original story, go back to Tolkien and let him tell the original story, right? So let's throw that out. Let's throw the trope argument out. So whether Jon Snow saves humanity or whether the Night King wipes out all of the living and – there's pockets of humanity and resistance living under the crypts of their castles, just waiting for the White Walkers to go back into hiding. Just like one of George R. R. Martin's science fiction books. I forget the name of those science fiction books he wrote, but he had that happen. The world was decimated, nuclear bombs or whatever, and then pockets of humanity rose up from that, and there was mutations and blah blah blah. This could happen in Game of Thrones, whatever. Let's talk about that. But I've talked enough about my theory. I'm interested in hearing Corey Smith. What's your theory?
Well, mine isn't nearly as grand as yours.
Shocking.
Shocking. Well, I mean, raising. I mean, you kind of went, you know, picking the low fruit there. But
you did. You know what? Bastard, you're right. That's.
I mean, come on.
You've earned yourself an extra large glass of mead tonight.
Okay. I mean, I actually spent some thought and, you know, anyways. Mine is kind of. It takes a little bit from the books, but mostly it's show. There's a lot of show evidence. And, you know, we kind of saw it in season 6. You know, people were saying, you know, what if Bran had warged into the Mad King? And that's what turned him crazy because he was shouting, burn them all, and da, da, da. And I'm not talking about that. There's always been this theory out there that Bran warged into Jaime Lannister at the start of the series when Bran finds Jaime and Cersei up in the tower in Winterfell. And the theory goes that Bran warged into Jaime at that moment and tossed himself out the window, thereby forcing Bran to head north and seek the Three-Eyed Raven and kind of completing the time paradox loop. Because had Bran continued to have the use of his legs, he probably would have not gone on that journey. He would have tried to become a knight or, you know, any other option. But when he lost his legs, he really didn't have any other option than to kind of go there if he wanted to do something of any kind of importance. So, okay. I mean, that's kind of my theory. I think that we can see that possibly happening with, you know, how everybody was inferring that he warged into the Mad King. And for me, the reason that I want it to be true is, you know, we've seen Jaime kind of morph from this, you know, arrogant asshole from the first couple seasons into someone that kind of, you know, after Brienne's influence, kind of has a little bit of a sense of morality now. But at the end of the day, from the moment we saw him, he tossed a 8-year-old kid out of a freaking window trying to kill him. So for me, you know, you've kind of started to like Jaime over the past couple seasons. And if Jaime is kind of removed from that, you know, if he's no longer responsible for throwing Bran out the window, if that actually is Bran's fault, then that kind of absolves Jaime and makes him someone you can really kind of like. So that was my big theory. So
I've read this theory before and I kind of like it. I like the fact that, Bran has had, and it's this whole time traveling mindfuck thing that Bran has had a major influence throughout the entire time loop of Game of Thrones, of A Song of Ice and Fire, going back to the beginning and all the way through to the end. So, like, Brandon, the builder, is actually Bran. You know, he built the wall. So Bran influenced Bran the Builder to build the wall. And then he influenced the Stark to build Winterfell. And, you know, he whatever have you, he's influenced all those guys to do whatever they had to do.
Son of
Thone, I know you're itching to get in on this. So why do you have a problem with this?
Because of timelines, man. Because... Because it's seriously, I'm gonna tell you guys that because we haven't seen how they're gonna end this Bran's power in the past thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say because right now they have not screwed it up necessarily. Although with what happened to Hodor, it's opening up this Back to the Future type like influence loop that is really hard to close. That Back to the Future did not close properly. And that no one has because it's impossible. Can I run you through real quick the problem with Back to the Future? Mm-hmm. Not that I don't love all three movies.
Don't fucking ruin my childhood, though.
Hang on. And by the way,
it's quiet, Smith. The man is talking.
1, 3, 2 is my favorite. There you go. I know that sounds weird to some people, but I like 3 more than 2. All right, so we'll start with at the end of Back to the Future 2, Doc and at the end of the action, Doc gets the time machine, gets struck by lightning, and sent back to 1885. So he hides the DeLorean from Marty in a cave for Marty to find while he's stuck in 1955. So he gets that telegram right when Doc is taken away, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you remember. So Marty finds the 1950s Doc before 1955, but after 1885, whenever the DeLorean was hid there. And they uncover the DeLorean in the cave and fix it up. And it had, you know, lots of rot and stuff to it. And then Marty takes that one back to 1885. So here's the thing. The one that Doc hid in that cave is still in 1885, as well as the one that Marty drives into 1885. So the entire movie didn't have to happen. Marty could have went and got the other DeLorean and then just gone back to the future. Okay?
Yeah.
And there's more problems as well. There's also the dual Marty theory, which is another interesting one, saying that in order to close the loop, to make it to where there are no more Martys coming like every night, you know, there's not a Marty standing outside of a Lone Pine Mall and a Double Pine Mall and whatever it's called and you know, watching each other zip in DeLoreans back and forth, is that whenever after Doc puts on the bulletproof vest, he figures out how to close the loop by rigging the DeLorean with explosives so Marty doesn't go back in time a second time. He has just blown up and killed, and now new Marty is back in 1985, and there's no Marty going to come behind him, right?
Okay.
So he had to close that loop or there'd be infinite Martys, or infinite Mortys if you're a Rick and Morty fan, right? So it's really complicated. That was a comedy movie from the 80s. With a freaking Huey Lewis and a News soundtrack, and it's that complicated. So if Game of Thrones is going to start playing around with some timelines and alternate dimension shit, they better have their ducks in a row because this is basically – it's going to get really complicated if you start saying that – if you start saying that Bran was Bran the Builder and that Bran did this and Bran did that, he forced all these events to happen, including, like you said – him getting knocked out the window and falling all the way to the ground and then setting off that timeline of events and everything.
Okay.
It's just really complicated, right?
Okay, but in my defense, everything that Razor was talking about, all the other things that he could potentially have done, I don't necessarily wasn't buying into that.
Okay.
I'm just specifically talking about the moment when Jamie pushes Bran out the window. And the flip side of that is it could have just easily been the old three-eyed Raven, the one before Bran. So
Yeah, they could have been.
And that would be an easier way to explain things and keep it kind of a little bit cleaner of a narrative.
Maybe. Or you could just simply say Jamie was an asshole and pushed the kid out of the window.
Well, right. Yeah, and it could just stay that way. But, but that's a theory that I would like to see come true, because then it does absolve Jamie of what is essentially his worst sin in Game of Thrones, is throwing that freaking, you know, throwing an 8-year-old out of window in the very first episode.
That's actually why I think that's a terrible idea, because part of the reason why Jamie is such a complicated character is the fact that he freaking did that and we can't get around it.
He's a very complex character, yes.
Also, he pseudo-raped his sister next to his dead son.
On the show.
He's done a lot of really bad things. There's no absolving him, and trying to absolve him is basically a fool's errand.
And the thing is, I will say, you do get an interesting concept with Bran being the person who had to shove himself out the window, because not only does it take away the use of his legs, it also starts the events of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's Bran getting paralyzed, and that creates a rift between, an even bigger rift between the Lannisters and the Starks, because there's this mistrust, and you know, I mean, it sets off everything. It really does. It's like a huge catalyst in the show, and it ends. I mean, it ends with Hodor at the door, and it ends, you know, with everything we've seen so far. All these dead people, and not just, you know, rich people, but soldiers and stuff dead. Right. You know, so I don't know. I think it's interesting. It's interesting to think that they're going to play more into that, because they've hinted to it twice with him.
Yeah, in his flashbacks, he saw himself fall out the window a couple of times when they did the kind of long montage.
Yeah. And the burn them all thing.
Yeah.
Right. So,
which I was actually saying, they hinted to him being able to influence the past in some way when he yelled at his dad, and then also with Hodor, we can see that Bran messed up. He messed Hodor up. So
right, and it wouldn't have taken a lot for Bran to kind of just. I mean, he would have only had to warg into Jamie for, you know, split second or two, and just kind of push, and then you know, go from there. So we'll see.
Cool.
All right, Annie, you're up. What's your theory?
I want John and Danny to fall in love.
Okay.
Like that. I don't care if it's the girly romantic thing. That's what I freaking want.
That's fine.
Love in a hopeless place.
Like, okay, seriously. Like, and it's one of those things where, like, I read it somewhere like a while ago, and it totally hit me, and I thought it was the greatest idea ever. You know, John so far has been madly in love with women who are kissed by fire. What happens when he finds one who is made of it?
Oh, okay.
Oh. He gets his dick burned.
And, you know, in a way, they've kind of hinted at that because, you know, they've kind of hinted at that with the show, because they had Dario talk about, you know, how, like, that she was the wildest ride he's ever had. Razor, you're basically saying you want this to be Jon Snow's story. No, I don't want this to be Jon Snow's story. I want this to be Jon and Danny's story. And I want, at the end, for there to be basically a dream of spring is somehow a next generation is born. And it might not be born of Danny and Jon, because Danny isn't able to have kids anymore. It might be born of Sansa. It might be born of, I don't know. I don't even know. Because considering who is alive at this point, you know, like, that's why I asked if the dragons were all boys, because I wondered if, like, you know, A Dream of Spring and the next generation was a baby dragon. So, you know, I have the
dire wolf with wings.
We didn't quite go there, but, you know, I that's basically my theory, is that when I want this to be when John met Danny.
So let me ask Corey Smith, because he's more of a Game of Thrones theologian than I am. When Miri Mazdur told Danny that she couldn't have kids again, what were the restrictions on it?
It's basically a flip of everything that kind of makes sense. So when the sun rises in the east, rises in the west and sets in the east, and then something about when the mountains fall, and just a
okay. So check this out. You're basically
sorry. Is that one of the new modern like Christian hymns that you would hear at like a cool coffee shop called like Crossroads or something?
Basically, yeah.
Hey, when the mountains fall and the sun is in the west, and
oh my god, now go to the chorus. So yeah,
Jesus. It's all you say over and over again.
I like that you brought up Crossroads because you know there's like a ton of cross churches around here in Fayetteville. Thanks for saying that. Anyway, so like the whole idea of Danny not being able to have kids again, and the fact that you just said the sun rising and setting and switching places.
It goes dry and the mountains blowing the wind.
What if the wall falls and that's the mountains falling, right? And what if it causes some kind of cataclysmic shift in the whatever in the Polaris or whatever Westeros, and we have and we have a rotation. I don't know.
Okay, I think, I mean, you're laughing, but I think there's something there.
This is cataclysmic shift in a Polaris. No, are you hacking in an NCIS episode? What the hell are you talking about?
Okay,
listen, Mark Harmon.
When Annie was talking about how it might not be Danny that has the kids, I tend to think that it might be Danny that does have the kids. And I think, especially in the books, I always got the undercurrent of a theme that the whole world was out of whack, you know, because right. you've got these winters that last decades. You've got summers that last, you know, 5-6 years. So the seasons, you know, literally the planet is out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, and you've got the White Walkers that continually have been coming back. They, you know, they were a threat, you know, 5,000 years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're coming back again. So to me, there's always been this theme that the world is literally out of whack. Not just who's sitting on the Iron Throne. It's literally the world is out of place. And so I could see there being something that in this final battle that we have with the White Walkers, it somehow fulfills the prophecy that Miri Mazdur, you know, kind of cursed Dany with before Dany lit her on fire. You know, so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Dany ends up being able to have kids once again.
Okay. I like Annie, I like your theory. I obviously the romantic side of me really wants to see Dany and John together in the end. I want to see, here's kind of, even though I think John is going to be, in my mind, John is going to be the catalyst for everything, killing off, either killing off the Night's King or beating him all the way back to the...
But you're going
to
say awesome.
Yeah, I know. I had to stop myself for a second. Beating him all the way back to the lands of always winter and making him go back to sleep and never come back out of the ice again. Whatever happens, and there's only a few pockets of human beings left. John and Dany are the way that human beings repopulate Westeros again. I like the idea of that. And then the Seven Kingdoms repopulates, and maybe magic comes back into the world. Maybe the Children of the Forest come back. Maybe whatever. We see all that come back. I don't know. I think it's a great and beautiful and romantic idea. Corey Thone, what is your theory?
Actually, it was kind of similar to what Annie was saying, and that's that John and Dany are going to have a baby.
Okay.
That was what I wrote down. Was like John and Dany have a baby, and John and Dany no longer they don't get to raise it though. Like they're dead. That Tyrion raises the baby.
Oh, I like that.
It's just something. I have no foundation for this. I have no basis of it. But I look around John and Dany, and I see people that know more than them. I see. I mean, honestly, John and Dany are pretty and they're skilled. But if you were to ask me who on these small councils should be king, well, it's Davos or Tyrion. You know, maybe you could say Varys or Jorah. You know, those folks have a lot more wisdom and a lot more, at least for a Shonley. I don't know the history of all these folks, so. I know that Varys is supposed to have a weird thing, but in the show, he's just like a—I don't know—it looks kind of looks like Rosie O'Donnell in a bald head and it walks around. And I think that what ends up happening is John and Dany have a baby, Dany gets pregnant by John. John dies defeating the Night's King or something. Dany dies in childbirth because she's not supposed to be pregnant, like Annie was saying, and it's a major thing, but the baby lives.
I like that because all three of the main characters of the show, Dany, Tyrion, and John, all their mothers all died in childbirth.
Right.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah,
so
there you go.
So, and then basically, so now you have like Cersei to raise a kid. No, I'm joking. You have, you know, the small council. Basically, you have people that can't, that were slaves, people that were highborn, and everything in between that are all around this child. That's like, okay, so. And they all want the best for the kingdom. And that's really the difference between them and everyone else, is that they're not going to try, like Littlefinger would try to manipulate, like he is with that creepy-ass kid that he's living with now, try to use some child with inherited power for gain. But none of those people, I think, would do that. Maybe Varys would a little bit, but not a lot. And I think that, I don't know, I think that, like, that could be the great unifier for everyone, is the child of the two saviors of Westeros. And, you know, they have this person grow up as king with this awesome council and all these people under a unified kingdom that supported its parents. And that's kind of where it ends, is with like a child king, and who, you know, isn't going to know the sadness that came before and only is going to have the optimism going forward.
Love that.
It's bittersweet, too.
Nope. It is, because everybody that we like would die, except for Tyrion. And oh, and you know what? And then Tormund is the Hand of the King, because hell yeah.
Corey Thrones.
That was kind of, what I wrote down, yeah.
I love it, man. Great, great job. So before we wrap this podcast up, let's talk about, I don't know, maybe probably the biggest fan theory out there. I don't know. It's probably... probably the most exciting thing that we've gotten, and Annie talked about it when we first started, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on it. Are we getting Clegane Bowl?
Yes.
No.
I don't know.
I'm buying it. I'm investing all. I don't give a shit if it's a housing bubble. I'm buying.
Buy.
Buy Clegane. Corey Thone is buying Clegane Bowl, and I'm on board. Let's do it, man.
What is this, Fox News? Make it stop.
Sounds like the episode of the Kramer Show.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I got to be honest. Like, when Annie, this morning when the news broke and Annie sent us all a message in Slack, I literally almost pulled over my car to read. I was like, oh my God, Clegane Bowl. I was like, let me pull over. I got to read this. But luckily I hit a red light. It took me forever and I got to read it at the light. But I was like, because to me, that's a super exciting topic for it to happen. But as the day has gone on, I am leaning more towards the producers are fucking with us. They like to do it once per season. And putting Rory McCann. In Seville, where we know everybody is there, kind of is a bit of a red herring, like they've done to us in the past, like with Shay and the White Walker that they had in the window of King's Landing. I don't know, something doesn't quite feel right about it yet, but I hope I'm wrong.
Annie?
Oh, I said when I gave the report, I think this is them screwing with us. I really do. I think that there's no reason for McCann to be there. I really think this is the producers pulling a fast one, because they know how much we've all been saying Clegane Bowl for how many seasons now?
Forever.
That's a great point. And it's like the easiest thing. Just have Rory come in, have some drinks, and hang out with a cool dude, and send him on his way, and everybody's like, oh, Clegane Bowl.
Because here's the other thing. Where are the other people that we last saw him with? Where's
exactly? They're not with him.
They all died, and they all died trying to get the White Walker in the North.
Right. It's possible. I'm just saying, it just doesn't feel right.
Listen, let me tell you. Thoros is supposed to die in that attack. So Thoros of Myr is gone. We don't know about Beric. We don't know what happens to Beric, and if the Brotherhood Without Banners loses Thoros, Barrett could be like, fuck it, I'm out. So
yeah.
So the rest of the Brotherhood could scatter, and the Hound could help Jon wrangle this white or White Walker back to King's Landing. So that's the only explanation I have for it. Now, again, you guys, like Annie and Corey Smith, you guys could be 100% dead on. This could be Benioff and Weiss just playing one big game of mind chess with us.
And I want to be wrong. I want it to happen. I want to see it. So I hope I'm wrong.
A dream thing for me. Here's my dream scene right here. Is we have Danny and John, Davos, and like her and all those retinue, her all of her little posse walking up to the dragon pit, right? And then we have Cersei, Jaime, Qyburn, and the Mountain walking up, right? And then we've got Euron and a few of his Ironborn. Maybe he's bringing a captured Yara with him in chains, right? And so they're all walking up to the dragon pit, and they just all kind of walk up, and they stand, and they're staring off at each other. And then all of a sudden, John looks behind him, and he nods, and here comes the fucking Hound dragging this, you know, unruly devil, white devil-looking zombie. And he brings him into the middle, and there the two brothers stare at each other, and there you have the face-off. Now, whether they draw swords on each other right there, or whether they decide to take it somewhere else and finish the deed, I don't know if it's even going to happen. But that would be a dream sequence for me to have.
Let me tell you my dream sequence with Colleen Bowl, okay. Because this is what I want. I don't want it to be a fair fight. I don't even want the Mountain to know what happened. I want his head cut clean off as he's about to do something evil. And whenever his gigantic, lifeless body tumbles to the ground, it's the Hound standing there, and he, like, just walks away. And it's like, yeah! I don't need the big fight between a cripple and a zombie. Like, I just want the Hound to get, you know, his vengeance on his shithead brother. So
what if he says something cool like, that was my fucking toy, and just walks away?
Yeah, playtime's over.
Playtime's
over. What is this, fucking child's play?
Come on. All right, guys. So we're going to wrap it up here. For myself, for Corey Smith, Randy Bundle, and Corey Thone, we miss you, Isis. We hope you come back next week. Thanks, guys, for listening. As always, if you have a topic you'd like us to talk about next week, leave it in the comments section or on Twitter, and we will respond to you, and we'll talk about it next week. Hopefully, we'll get some more filming news. Maybe we'll get some Clegane Bowl news. We don't know. So, hey, thanks for listening once again. Valar Morghulis.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.